Hello, friends! It's your old pal, Ariel Helwani, back with another Wednesday episode of The Helwani Show. Three big-time guests this week. Paul Felder, who just retired on Saturday night officially. Charles Oliveira, the new UFC undisputed lightweight champion. And Carlos Esparza, the number one contender, at least in my opinion, in the strawweight division. We'll get to all that in a second. But before we get to it, shout out to the Hoop Collective podcast. Brian Windhorst and his cast of characters are all over the NBA, the National Basketball Association. Big time Knicks game tonight. Game 2, Hawks, MSG, the Mecca, revenge. Let's go. Anyway, I tune in to each and every episode of the Hoop Collective. I suggest you check it out wherever you get your podcasts. Also, The Ultimate Fighter is back June 1st, next Tuesday, only on ESPN Plus. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com. All right, on to today's show, which does contain some language that may not be suitable for all audiences. So as always, listener discretion is advised. Enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA Show!
Back in your life on this Wednesday, May 26, 2021. Hello again, everyone. Hope you're doing well. Welcome back to a brand new edition of The Helwani Show on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. A lot to get to this week with three very interesting names. Before I get to the show, quick reminder, no DC and Helwani next Monday, no Helwani Show next Wednesday, no Arion the Bad Guy next Wednesday. So we're off next week from start to finish, but we'll be back for the Monday episode leading into the next UFC pay-per-view, which of course goes down June 12th, Glendale, Arizona. You got the two title fights and, of course, the return of Nathan Diaz versus Leon Edwards. A lot going on, as always, in the world of MMA. On Saturday, there was some big news regarding Paul Felder, a fighter's fighter, a class act. No one doesn't like Paul Felder. No one doesn't respect Paul Felder. Well, he has turned into a fantastic broadcaster, and he retired on the job last Saturday while calling the fights. He didn't retire from commentating. So we spoke to Paul Felder about his announcement, where he goes from here, his career, regrets, highlights, all that and more. Also spoke to Charles Oliveira, the new UFC lightweight champion, who, of course, won the belt against Michael Chandler just a couple of weeks ago. Talk about the win, the comeback, the celebration, the parade, his first title defense, all that and more. And we also talked to Carlos Esparza on the show today, who had a fantastic win this past Saturday against Yan Xiaonan. I think she should be next for a title shot. I think she should fight Rose Namajunas. The storyline is there. She beat Rose in the first strawweight title fight in UFC history back in 2014, finals of The Ultimate Fighter. What a great season that was with all the strawweights living in the house. It seems like a no-brainer, and especially when you come off a win like that over someone who has looked oh so good as of late in Yan Xiaonan, to me, it's a no-brainer. I don't know why they're not coming out and saying that she's the number one contender officially. I don't know why they don't do that more often, to be honest. Like, the more titles, the more labels you can put on fights, number one contender, all that stuff, the bigger the fights are. And yet, for some reason, the UFC doesn't want to do this. Now, I think it's because of a leverage thing. I think it could be because of a, you want to hedge your bet. That being said, it just makes the fights bigger. So we'll talk to Carla about all that and more on the program. But first, here's my conversation with the Irish Dragon, Paul Felder, who, like I said, retired on Saturday. Last time we saw him, November, Rafael dos Anjos. Took the fight on 5 days' notice. What a career he had. Now he transitions to some exciting things. We discuss all that and a whole lot more. Enjoy.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, let's say hello now to a man who made some very big news this past weekend in the midst of the UFC broadcast. He was there to call the fights, but then we got some personal news out of Paul Felder. He officially announced that he'd be retiring from active MMA competition, something that he has hinted at for quite some time, but he made it official on Saturday. And so first things first of all, Paul, thank you so much for the time. I appreciate your time very much. Congratulations on the announcement. Congratulations on the fallout. Could I just ask first, like the last, 48 to 72 hours, what is it like as you make an announcement like this? Because I'm assuming everyone is reaching out. There's text, DMs. It could be overwhelming, right?
It is a bit overwhelming because there's a lot of people that I care about that I'm trying to make sure I'm getting back to as many people that I know as possible. And it's just makes you a little anxious that you're going to miss somebody that's somebody you care about and they've said something really nice to you, or somebody you respect and says something to, and you're just trying to get back to everybody. But yeah, it's been really, really nice. I mean, amazing to see kind of where I sat in the hearts of a lot of MMA fans. And it's where I kind of thought that I lived, but to see it the way it is and the respect that people put on my name and how much they enjoyed watching me over the years, it's been bittersweet because now I'm kind of like, damn, I'm going to miss that, but it's definitely going to be something I miss and am not going to go back to.
I was going to ask, are you already rethinking your retirement? Retirements and fighting don't usually last long. No,
not for a second.
Okay.
I'm loving it. I was just at Dunkin' Donuts getting some donuts after a hard ass run this morning. And I got a hard ass swim tonight, and I shouldn't be cursing. Is okay?
Yeah, totally fine.
All right.
I want to get to that training that you're doing, but was there, and not to put anyone down, was there one message, text, phone call that stood out above the rest?
I mean, it was cool. Like DC gave me a phone call, and that's always good to hear from somebody that's been there, has done this, and is kind of relating to me. So it was cool to talk to him about it. But he's one of the people that also stresses me out. Me and him were actually talking yesterday. He called me. I'm talking to him as I was coming back from the airport, and Christine was picking me up and it transferred to my car getting picked up, and I lost the call. And then I was saying hi to Christine and Ashley and I forgot to call him back. And I'm like, oh dude. And then like a day or two later, I was like, oh my God, I never called DC back. And I texted him. I thought he was all mad at me. He's like, bro, I'm not mad at you. I was like, whew. Who else? I mean, there's just so many people, but yeah, I mean, just the fighters, to see all the fighters react and to hear Dana say good things about my career and just all the staff backstage the night I retired talking to me. I mean, these are the people I work with and I have a lot of respect for. So that meant a lot.
Do you remember when you made this decision internally before announcing it, of course, like how long ago have you made this decision and how long have you been sitting on it?
Man, I mean, I guess I'd say the last few months, I've probably been pretty sure and have been saying it out loud to everybody. And everybody just keeps going, no, you'll do another one. You'll be all right. You'll get motivated. You'll do that. And I've been trying to tell people, it's like when you have a problem, but all your friends are just brushing it under the rug. My cries for help of wanting to retire, I've been saying for a really long time. And I think I finally put my foot down and got pretty serious with everybody. And I was like, listen, I really don't think I've got it anymore. I don't want to fight. Cause they kept saying, well, what about this person? What if Connor wants to fight you? What if this? And I was like, man, it's not the who anymore. Cause at first that's what I thought it was. I thought maybe I'm not getting the big fights. I'm not getting the fights that I want, but I think it's just, I don't want to put myself through what you have to put yourself through anymore.
And so coming to the conclusion of like sitting there and saying you knew that was coming, right? It was probably, what was Saturday like for you? Like actually saying it to the world and you're calling a few fights.
Yeah.
And now it's like, producer in New York, probably you're up next, but like, what was that all like? And then what was the aftermath? Like, cause then you have to go back to calling fights.
Yeah. It was weird because I forgot when they told me we were going to do it. So I didn't know. I saw them like a camera come up, but throughout the night, the cameramen were filming the corners. They were also filming me, Mike, and Brendan, and filming a bunch of different stuff. So a camera kept coming up for close-ups of us. And I kept thinking, oh, this is going to be it. And then when they set up the camera and Zach was like, all right, your thing is coming up now. And I was like, oh, but I didn't know there was a little video that had been made. I thought it was just going to be kind of set up by Brendan and go from there. But then getting back to it was no issue for me, really. I mean, I had my little moment. We had a little break. I got to collect myself. And it had been something like we just said, you know, I knew for months now that this is where I was going to go. I just didn't know how I was going to do it. I talked to you about it and then unfortunately had to disappoint you and come on after I had already done it. So sorry, Ariel.
No problem.
But yeah, it's something I'd come to terms with probably for a while. Now I would say at least a solid 2 full months of me knowing I wasn't going to take a fight, which is why, you know, when guys are calling me out, it was really frustrating because I want to be like, man, I'm not fighting, but I hadn't come to that final announcement yet. So
okay, so why didn't you do it 2 months ago?
Well, because I was kind of talked into just sitting on the sidelines and seeing if that was going to change, and for the positive, like my management, Brian Butler, Hunter, Sean Shelby, friends and family, even when I would ask their advice, they're like, why don't you just sit, maybe take the summer and really make sure that it's something that you don't want to do. And I just kept waiting and waiting. And I was like, no, I'm starting to feel guilty because in my mind and in my heart, I know I'm done. So if I'm just going to be one of those guys that's just kind of sitting around just to sit around, and I hated that guy. When I was a young fighter coming up through the ranks in the UFC, I hated the guys that didn't fight, that just sat on their ranking and took up space because I wanted it so bad. I wanted to be in the ranking so bad. And now I've been around 7 years and I'm becoming that guy. And I don't want to do that.
So if someone comes up to you and says, why are you retiring now? Why do you not want to fight anymore? What is the answer?
I'm enjoying my life at home, doing the things I'm doing. I think my priorities in my life have shifted at this point in my life. And fighting is not at the top of that. And if fighting is not at the top of your list of stuff that matters most, it's a dangerous sport to be involved in anymore. And it's not. It's not. Commentating is now. It is finally. I'm more interested in working the big fights as a commentator. I'm more interested in doing other shows, the podcast, UFC Roundup. I want to do other things. I would love to do a thing where I go to different gyms or take fighters out to eat and get them a cheat day and do cool stuff like that and have that relationship with different people because I've been through it. I've known what they've gone through. I get to work the Contender Series, which is another thing that's awesome because it's the hot young prospects getting their shot to do what I've already done, mm-hmm. to live their dream and fight in the UFC and chase that title. And then training is, you know, I do want to get back in the gym. I do want to go help Sean Brady, who I believe is going to be, you know, top 10 and top 5 in the next year or so. I know he's got a big fight coming up and it's on the McGregor and Poirier card. So I'm already trying to figure out a way to make sure I'm in the crowd that night.
Yeah, he's fighting Kevin Lee. That is a really interesting fight on paper. Often in fighting, fighters don't have the next steps figured out when it's time to say goodbye. Clearly you do. Does it make it easier to say goodbye to your active fighting career because you're a commentator and very entrenched in that world? You're a part of the team, so to speak. Does that make it easier for you?
Oh my, I mean, so much easier than most 90-some% of the roster, right? Most athletes, when it comes time, no matter what sport, most athletes just have to be like, okay, football is done. Basketball is done. Fighting is done. Not everybody gets the opportunity to do what I'm doing, or DC and Mike and Dom. I mean, this is a real privilege. And I don't want to lose that. And I don't want to lose my credibility either. And if I fight, but don't have my heart in it, I could get hurt. I could be embarrassed. So it was time to just focus on that. But yeah, so much easier because think about that. Most guys don't get to be in the sport. They've either got to coach or find another job. And that is much, much harder to deal with as a fighter to just be done like that. For me, it seems like a pretty seamless transition. There's other things I want to do, obviously, beyond fighting, but this certainly makes giving up fighting a lot easier.
When you left the cage after the RDA fight in November, did you know in your head that that was it?
I didn't.
Okay.
That confused me. That confused the whole situation. But in hindsight, the only thing that got me really excited was the circumstances around it. Because you saw, I didn't really care that I lost that fight. I was excited for what we just did because the story and the journey of that whole thing was so much more to me than the actual fight. The fight was fun. Me and him went at it. We had a 5-round fight. I didn't win. It was not even a split decision. Let's be honest. I lost that fight, but I was competitive and I made him work and I busted him up a little bit. And I had so much fun in the crazy weight cut that almost killed me.
It was that bad?
It was bad, man. Really, really, really bad. Like dry heaving in a bathtub, pouring cold water on myself, shaking. I was watching these YouTube videos of people slamming ice cold sodas all night long, just like chugging sodas. I found this ASMR video of people just drinking ice cold sodas all night long. All night long. I mean, hours of me just watching that stuff, just curled up in a bed.
Have you ever done that before?
Not with the sodas. No, that was a whole new. That was a whole new thing. That was a new. Usually, I'm watching things that involved food as well because I'm hungry.
Right.
But this was such a rapid weight cut that the hunger never even became a thing. It was so much water. I was so thirsty for so long. It was horrible.
Okay. And perhaps that expedited things maybe in retrospect.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I never want to cut weight again.
Right.
Ever, ever, ever again. Never, ever, ever again. And which is so funny because right now I'm so skinny.
Yeah. I could see it in your face. How much do you weigh right now?
I was after the run I did today, which was a really hard run. It was 1 hour and 5 minutes and it was like a threshold interval type track workout. I was 169.
Wow. And that's walk around 6 months removed from your last fight. What do you usually sit?
I woke up this morning, just fresh, first wake up, take a pee, weigh myself, which is what I normally, I was 172.
And what are you usually 6 months, out of a fight back in the day with nothing on the horizon?
Close to 200 pounds.
Wow. And why are you so light?
It's because of this. I've been training for this half Ironman.
And when's that going down?
June 6th.
And do you think that you will keep this up post June 6th?
Yeah, I've already got a race in Oregon signed up for July 25th, one in August in Atlantic City, and then one in Maryland in October.
And why are you doing this?
Because I'm obsessed with it.
Obsessed with the
sport. And
how did that happen? Was that always something you were into?
Never. As a matter of fact, I hated running. I couldn't swim and I didn't have a bike. So I went from not having a bike ever as an adult, except for when I was in college. I'd never swam like a length of a pool until like a year or so ago when I started doing it a little bit for training, but I could do like one length, take a break, one length, take a break. Now I'm swimming miles in a river.
Wow.
During the pandemic, I started wanting to run more and then got interested in completing a marathon. I was like, you know what? That's something, it's a bucket list thing. Like, I feel like as an athlete, I should be able to check that off that I've completed a marathon. And I was starting with a half marathon and I signed up. Then they all kept getting canceled, but I was running more and more miles than I ever have. So I started watching YouTube videos to see what workouts can I do to make these runs more interesting. So I started looking up, tempo workouts and just different, how do real runners do their training and upon doing that, I started stumbling on all these triathletes doing a lot of their different workouts. Through that, I found this guy, Lionel Sanders, who's one of the best guys in the world. He's a Canadian athlete. And he's one of the best triathletes in the world. Dude is an absolute machine. Started watching all his YouTubes, does a really good job. Having a YouTube series, this guy Talbot, his buddy films him, is a really good videographer. Started getting obsessed with them, then reached out to him on Instagram, started talking to him. He's obsessed with the UFC, and I got him tickets for the one in Arizona. That's where he lives now, is in Arizona. And just slowly but surely, I bought a Peloton, got into riding that. That wasn't enough. Got a real bike, got a trainer, started hired this guy, David Tilbury Davis, who's a professional triathlete coach, and just it just started snowballing, and I got more interested in that than even going to the gym to do MMA.
Wow.
Then the RDA fight came up, but I was in really good shape because of this race prep. And yeah, so I just, and then I started getting in and following other guys and women and just their journeys and how tough they are. And it's very similar to MMA in that it's not just one discipline that I'm focused on. It's just like mixed martial arts, where I've got to blend my time amongst a whole plethora of three things of different training and different ways to do each one of those trainings and different intensities. And not to mention, I'm eating so much and I'm losing weight by the day. So, and I'm home. I'm seeing Christine all the time. Our relationship is amazing right now. I get to see Ashling before school, take her to school, or Christine takes her to school. I make her breakfast. And then, you know, when I'm on the road, it's not so bad because I've been home all the time.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, it's just, it's good. And obviously there'll be, you know, it always sucks. I was just starting to make some decent money as a fighter. So financially it's, you know, I'm not hurting, but it's always to lose out on big paydays. But once I start doing movies, that'll cover that stuff.
Is that part of the dream about you know, the next step? Yes. Okay. How soon, like, are you actively pursuing that right now?
Yeah. So I guess I can talk about it more and more now. So I'm in the HBO show, the HBO Max show Hacks with Gene Smart. Caitlin Olsen's in it. It's out now. It is hilarious. It's about an aging stand-up, very famous stand-up female comedian who's living in Vegas. And she's trying to obviously update. Well, she doesn't want to, but reluctantly she gets a younger female writer who's a comedian to help her kind of update her jokes and get her to reach out to a more broader, younger audience because she's losing some space at the casino. And that's all I'll say about that. And I come in later in this. I haven't been on the show yet. I'm in one episode, but I got to work on, you know, the Paramount lot in LA for weeks on set with all these actors and have a real speaking part and do some real scene work and working with some guys to get me some more jobs. I mean, nothing is other than that has really kicked off yet, but I just retired. I'm just now getting refocused and doing that. And I think it'll help that I'm, you know, I can live a healthier lifestyle doing what I'm doing. Whereas the fighting, the fluctuation of the weight, one day I'm 200 pounds, one day I'm 175 pounds. So I think this is good for long-term health in the long run.
When you look back at the fighting career, any regrets?
Yeah, I mean, there's certain fights that I know I probably shouldn't have taken. Me and Christine were just talking about the one fight, the Trinaldo fight, was probably like one of the dumber fights I ever took. I was begging for a fight. I was begging for a guy that was higher ranked than me. And Joe Silva at the time was like, this is the fight. Take it or leave it. That's all you've got. You want a top 15 guy? Here's your top 15 guy. Trinaldo in Brazil, his hometown. And me being me at the time, I took it. I wouldn't have taken that Ross Pearson fight on short notice. And I probably would have really focused on my diet and being a cleaner athlete year round. It's really sucks that you learn some of these lessons that, you know, in your late 30s towards the end of your career. Like, if I could be how I am now, but 29, 30, 31, God, I'd have been such a much better athlete. I'm already a crazy person. I'm already tough as they come. I love a fist fight. But if I had added just being disciplined, not murdering myself with weight cuts, so did all those young fighters out there, my God, please, I know it seems cool to be so big in your weight class. It's not worth it in the long run. You're just messing up your metabolism. You're messing with your body. You're going to make things more difficult. You're going to end up moving up a weight class that you probably don't have to move up to. But since you weren't disciplined enough early on, you screwed yourself up. So that's my big regret, is not living a cleaner, healthier lifestyle year round. I mean, I don't party like I used to, you know. I used to like to go drink a lot of beers and be out and stuff. Still love a beer, still love a glass of wine, but all in moderation now. You know, I don't go out and party like I used to. So it's.
On the flip side though, highlight, is there a fight? Is there a moment one that sticks out?
Yeah, there's definitely a couple. I mean, obviously that Dan Hooker fight in New Zealand with that crew, having all my coaches living in this beautiful Airbnb we had right across from this park in New Zealand. We're there for like 2.5 weeks. We're running outside in the beautiful weather. You know, everybody wanted Dan to win, but everybody was also so freaking nice to me too. Like when every radio station I went to, those people were all genuine. People on the streets were yelling out of their cars at me, good luck, you know, this for this fight. And yeah, that first main event, you know, I'll never forget that. Finally headlining, it was such a dream for so long. And now I'm looking at two posters on my wall with my face on it. So, you know, didn't get that title shot, but the main event was that it was main event, then it was title shots, right? You know, mm-hmm. I had a sequence of things that me and my mom would always talk about, like what I have to do before I can think about retirement. And the one for sure was definitely get in as many main events as you can do in the time that you feel good about still fighting. And two, one on super short notice against fighting a former champion. That sticks out to me. Those two main events. And obviously Stevie Ray, that fight in Scotland, just whenever I would win on home turf like that. It's crazy that the Charles Oliveira fight isn't really won, because at the time, that was a fight I expected to win.
Yeah.
I expected to beat him. I think I might even been the favorite or slight underdog in that fight, but now look at him. My God.
Hey, that one's aged well, at least, right? Oh, I mean, I feel like you're getting credit for it after the fact.
So aged, I mean, like the finest of wines. And we've been talking about how that aged well for so long now. I mean, he's been on such a win streak that me and my buddies have been talking about, like, yo, that Charles Oliveira win was really young. And that was a year ago. Now, I mean, I was so stoked. Nothing against Michael Chandler. I really have nothing against that guy. But when he won, we lost our minds here. A bunch of my friends were over and, that was great. I was great. I beat the champ.
Yeah.
Beat the champ.
Feather in your cap. Now, by the way, you mentioned your mom, a legend on Twitter. I would see her pop up from time to time. Just curious, once you made it official, what was the conversation like with her? I'm assuming she was watching.
Yes. Yeah. She said, you know, very classy. And she loved how I handled it and that I'm choosing to go out. It's really important to me. And I think to my family and the people that love me and care about me, that I always said, listen, guys, when I know it's time, like, I will leave the sport. I was saying this even before there was commentary jobs and stuff like that. Like, I knew I didn't want to overstay my welcome. I'd rather leave the party a little early and have an Irish goodbye and just peace out before anybody sees me get too drunk at that party. And if I stay too long and get beat up too much longer, I want to keep everything intact. But mom was very happy and very pleased at how it went down. And she's excited to see what happens from here. And she gets to watch me on TV doing commentary whenever she wants. And she gets to see me a lot more. So, I mean, it's all positive. She's going to my race in June, Virginia. So she gets to see me compete now and doesn't have to walk away and go hide her eyes. You know, she can watch me do that stuff much safer now.
Well, you are a class act, my friend, and love to see all the love that you are receiving. You're a fighter's fighter, right? Like, all the fighters respect you, and I think you saw that, and they appreciate your heart and your determination. And it's so
even
great.
Connor, even Connor.
I mean, how about that? The rivalry or relationship between you and Connor is a bizarre. I don't understand what's going on there. Perhaps you do.
You know, I think he's just, as they would say, man, I think he's just always been taking the piss, to be honest with you. You know, he's a true Irishman.
Yeah.
And obviously I'm the Irish Dragon. So I think him and his boys are just having fun. You know, this guy's calling himself the Irish Dragon. How can we not roast him a little bit? But I think at the end of the day, there's no real bad blood there. You know, I'm trying to go to his fight. So if Connor sees this, Connor, please. I'm trying to get tickets, but your show is going to be quite a sellout. So as a present to the old Irish Dragon or the German Dragon, whatever you want to call me, my friend, give me some tickets for that show so I can take the fam.
I appreciate. I was going to mention the Connor thing, but I was like, you know what? Let's just leave it. So I appreciate you. You bring.
Yeah. That. Oh, I loved it. I loved it.
Next time we'll talk about Josh Fabia, but we'll leave that one.
Oh, yeah. Any day.
On the cutting room floor. All the best to you, Paul. The great thing is, we'll still see you at all the events, commentary, all that stuff. Good luck with the acting and the triathlons. You're the new Nick Diaz and Nate Diaz. I love it. It's great. Yeah, so
I love it. I see what those guys were into now. But back then I'm like, what the hell are they into this stuff for? Now. My God, you guys are on to something. Nick, Nate, props, bro. You guys, you're on to it.
Thank you, Paul. Talk to you soon.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
All right, let's say hello now to the brand new undisputed UFC lightweight champion. You know this man, Charles Oliveira. Less than 2 weeks ago, he won the title in Houston, Texas. Phenomenal win, phenomenal performance. What a comeback it was against Michael Chandler. He's kind enough to join us from his home in Brazil. Charles, obrigado, parabéns. Thank you for the time.
Charles is super happy. I want to say thanks for the pleasure to talk to you.
Could you describe, if possible, what the last 10 days have been like in your life, winning the belt, the way in which you did, coming home, the reception that you got? How do you describe the last 10 days in your life?
Charles is living paranormal days here in Brazil. He's so glad, so happy, and can't understand what is happening in his life.
We saw amazing scenes when you returned home. They had a parade for you. You're on a bus, all these people. Were you expecting that reception?
Charles imagined that we'll have some people waiting us, but we better in a different way. Charles could not be, how can I say? Charles would not expect in this way, in this size of people.
Who organized that?
Organic. You know, the people yep. that start to come in like from different states or different cities and come to Guarujá.
You know, we've seen other great Brazilian champions win belts, Amanda Nunes, Anderson Silva, Jose Aldo, Junior dos Santos. I have never seen something like that before. Why do you think your win has meant so much to fellow Brazilians?
Charlie said that he's believing in his history, you know. The way that he come to UFC, all these years that came, that was in this fight, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was your 28th UFC fight. You've been in the promotion for 11 years. Can you be honest with me, Charles? Was there a time, you know, when you had those 8 losses in the company, was there a time where you didn't believe that this was possible, that you'd be able to turn your career around and become undisputed champion? Did you lose hope at any point?
Charles had on his heart that this day will come. He never lost the hope, you know, yeah. And this day's come.
So if I would have told you in 2017 in Detroit, you lose to Paul Felder, that's your last loss. Hey, Charles, don't worry. You're going to turn this around. You're going to be champion in a few years. You would have believed me?
For sure, 100%.
How did you stay so positive? Like most people wouldn't have believed me. How did you stay so focused and motivated and positive about reaching this goal?
Charlie said that the 100% that was his fate, the power of trusting God in his destiny.
Going back to the fight, when you had him in the body triangle for the rear naked choke, were you surprised that he was able to get out of that?
Charles was not surprised. Charles was ready to end any movement that the Chandler could do.
Do you remember what you were thinking going to the corner in between the first and second round? Because it looked like he was close to potentially finishing you. Do you remember what was going through your mind and what your coaches told you in order to regroup?
Charlie said that when the round finished, he got up like normal, you know, feeling good, and go directly to the corner and sit down and wait the instructions.
You weren't nervous? You weren't hurt? Nothing like that?
My coach only asked if I feeling good, and I said, I'm okay. And he just put the fingers on my eyes, but I'm okay.
When you won the fight and you jumped over the cage, who were you celebrating with?
I just want to celebrate, and I said to Joe, thankful. I'm so glad, and I just want to celebrate.
And those other people that you ran over towards in the crowd, who was that? Were those family members, friends? Who was that?
Yeah, old friends that live in USA and that I have a long friendship.
Now back home in Brazil, a lot of people talk about where you live. Do you still live in the favelas? And do you have, if so, any plans of leaving now that you're a champion?
I want to still live here in Guarujá, near to my family, near to my friends. And I'm still happy here. And I have a plan to continue here.
And I've seen that you've done a lot of charitable work, Christmas, and you go around and you give presents and things of that nature. Why is that so important to you, to be such a presence in your community?
Charles believed that one day he received this present, these souvenirs, this support, and now he considered that is his time to develop and to deliver to the people that live here a little bit of your what he can do for the other people, you know?
Okay. And just a couple other questions. Do you believe, have you been told that your next opponent will be Dustin Poirier or Conor McGregor? Has the UFC told that to you?
UFC didn't told yet, but the crowd is telling this, and I'm anxious.
Is that what you think makes most sense for you next, Dustin or Conor, the winner of that fight?
For the champion, doesn't matter. I want the champions, and I'm the champions, and it doesn't matter. Call me each one.
No preference. He doesn't have a single preference. Sure. No. Wow.
No.
Will you be watching that fight on July 10th?
For sure, 100% in front of TV.
Who do you think wins?
Will be a big fight. It's just two big names.
But you don't have a pick, a prediction.
I don't know.
Okay.
Charles don't know. Just come any name in his mind.
And for you, Charles, 31 years old now, how much longer do you think you have in the sport? I mean, you've been doing this since you were in the UFC 20, prior to that as a teenager. In your mind, do you want to fight for 10 more years?
100%. It's just the beginning.
Final question. Last question for you, Charles. You have been compared to the reception, and what you mean to people has made people start to think of the late Ayrton Senna, the race car driver. To be compared to someone like that, a legend like that, what does that mean to you?
It's a big pleasure to have my name near to the Ayrton Senna, and this represent good things for me. And I'm so pleasure, and I'm so good to have my name compared with the Ayrton Senna here in Brazil.
Charles, congratulations again. Parabéns. Thank you for the time.
Thank you.
Look forward to the next one.
Thank you.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
All right. Now let us say hello to who I consider to be the number one contender in the UFC women's strawweight division, the young woman who had a fantastic win this past Saturday night in Las Vegas against Yan Xiaonan, arguably one of her best, not the best, I think we can all agree on the best, but one of her best in the UFC thus far. And I think she cemented her spot as the number one contender. For some reason, there's some reluctancy in cementing that spot and making that announcement from the UFC brass, but we'll get all those answers to all those questions from the one and only Carla Sparza, who's kind enough to join us right now. Carla, how are you?
I'm doing great. Great to talk to you, Ariel.
It is great to talk to you, and congratulations on the win. Would you agree? So when I was alluding to potentially your number one top performance, obviously the title win against Rose would be number one. I think this was number two. Would you agree with that?
Oh, 100%, for sure.
Did you feel like you had to do something emphatic? Did you feel like you had to make a point, get a finish, do something great in order to turn the non-believers into believers that you are, in fact, the number one contender?
Definitely. I feel like if I, my mentality was going in, you know, I think the fight with Rose made sense no matter what for the winner. But I think, you know, if I went in and had kind of like a boring, you know, decision victory, it would have been like, I don't think people would have been hyped up for the fight. So I think this really got people excited.
So I said leading up to this fight, obviously not knowing who was going to win, that this was the clear number one contender fight at 115, considering what you've done as of late, considering your past with Rose, considering what Jan had done as of late, her past as well. Like, it just seemed like the perfect number one contender fight. And for some reason, they never came out and said that. And I know they don't do that all the time now, maybe to, you know, hedge their bet, so to speak. But did that bother you that it wasn't a clear cut number one contender fight out in the public?
You know, a little bit. In my mind, it was always, you know, clear. It was always number one contender fight, you know, especially since there was talks of me fighting for the title even before this fight. So, you know, I would like to hope so, and, you know, hope that they just make it happen. But you never know with the UFC. Like, obviously, we've seen a lot of people just kind of cut the line and get in for that.
Speaking of the last few months, when it seemed like they couldn't come to a deal with Rose there for a second, you were being put out there as the potential next opponent for Zhang Weili. Did you feel like that was a true possibility, or did you think that you were kind of getting stuck in the midst of this negotiation?
I definitely thought it was a true possibility. They actually even had set up the fight to be announced. They were going to give us the fight on like 3 weeks notice. And I was like, I'm in, like, let's do it. And then, you know, they were like, well, she needs at least 5 weeks to make weight or whatever the case was. And they only had the last card. It was like in 4 weeks, and they were just waiting, like, to hear. I was told from someone that they even saw the promotional flyer, like, backstage at the fights. Like, they were ready to, like, put it out, but they never got an answer from her. And then obviously when they did, it was a no for whatever reasons.
Interesting. Were you disappointed when that didn't come to fruition?
I was a little bit disappointed, but, you know, I feel, you know, I'm just going to be patient, and it was going to come.
When you watched the Zhang Rose fight on April 24th, were you surprised by not only the result, but the way in which the fight played out, since you obviously know both quite well?
Oh, definitely. I think that caught everyone off guard. You know, I think a lot of people may have thought that Rose definitely could have won that fight, but just in the fashion that she won it, like, so early on against such a, like, a tough striker. I mean, you saw Weili and Joanna, like, go at it, like, in a war. Like, they're obviously some super high level, you know, athlete strikers, and to see someone just go in there and just put her down like that in the first round, it's definitely a little surprising.
As you were watching that, did you think that that actually increased your chances to be next in line for a title shot, you know, had you defeated Yan Xianan, which you did, because of your history with Rose?
Yeah, not only my history with Rose, but with Joanna's history with Rose. I think, you know, Weili and Joanna had such an epic fight that having a, you know, like, a part two could have made sense. But I think with Rose, especially given that Joanna, you know, had recently lost to her twice. And then obviously I have a win over Rose. I think the fight definitely just made a lot more sense.
All right. So then you go into this fight against Jan. Did you think it would play out like that? I mean, she's looked really good in the UFC and even prior to the UFC, but to have the success that you did on the ground and to stop her, like, did you all feel like the fight, you know, did your whole team feel like the fight would play out like this, or were you expecting something differently?
You know, you always go in every fight kind of expecting a war. Like, you can't be like, I'm going to win this fight and, you know, one or two rounds and then it's going to be done. Like, you know, I was prepared for a tough fight, especially seeing the fight with Claudia and seeing that she was able to really, like, neutralize her takedowns in the second and third. And, you know, she got her timing in, she was circling, she was you know, really judging the distance well. I definitely thought I was going to have to work a lot harder to get in there. I was prepared to go in for, you know, not one takedown, but two, three, four, five, you know, to solidify that if I had to, but you know, I'm not complaining. That's for sure.
What about the blood? How did you feel about that?
It's always nice to see blood when it's not yours.
Okay. So it didn't make things more difficult. I mean, obviously you had no problem finishing the fight, but it makes things slippery, right?
I don't think so. Not in this case. Like, okay. I feel like I had the lock in over the legs and, you know, it really didn't cause a problem.
Okay. The fighter kit that you were wearing was pretty gnarly after the fact. What are you going to do with that?
I don't know, honestly. Like, I mean, I've had different thoughts. I mean, I might frame it because it's such a cool like piece, but yeah. You know, I was actually thinking about maybe like selling it and donating proceeds to charity or something. I think that'd be cool. Like, I don't know, like, let me know if anyone's interested.
I feel like there's going to be a lot of people who are interested in that. It's, I mean, you could see the photos on your Instagram, and I'm sure now that the blood has soaked in, it's a pretty cool visual. It's probably mostly pink at this point, I would imagine. correct me if I'm wrong. Is that the bloodiest fight you've ever been a part of?
Maybe it's a close one. When I fought Nina Ansaroff like years ago in North Dakota, like, she caught me with a kick to the nose, and like, that was all my blood though. Like I had like a gray sports bra and I took it off and it was like pure red, you know, after, and you know, that was a really bloody fight. Like I was bloody from head to toe, but that was all mine. So I definitely happier about this one.
Just the 11th crucifix win in UFC history, which kind of surprised me. I thought there would be more. So yeah. Just goes to show, you know, how rare that is. And, I mean, obviously once you lock that in, it's very tough to get out, and you're so strong on the ground. So like I said, it was supremely impressive. And I thought going into it, all right, done deal. Winner of this fight is the number one contender. And then you have a performance like that and it's really a done deal. I mean, there is no room for any kind of discussion whatsoever. But then even afterwards, UFC president Dana White wasn't committing to you being number one contender. What did you make of that?
Yeah, it's like, come on, Dana, like, seriously, like, come on. I know he was definitely impressed with the fight, you know, from what my coach says and people say, but, you know, I just, you want to hear those words, like, you got the fight, it's your fight. So, you know, until I hear that, I'm not gonna count my chickens before they hatch, but I'm hopeful.
Do you feel like you're in a good spot right now? I mean, have they said anything to your management, maybe since the fight on Saturday night? How are you feeling? How confident are you that your next fight is for the belt against Rose?
I mean, I'm confident, but at the same time, like, I know that it's potential. There's talks of it going to Weili too. And for me, that fight doesn't make sense. You know, it's not like she, you know, she's a, like, you know, like a lawsuit, like a, you know, GSP or like a John Jones, someone who's had like this, like these 5 to 10, you know, like defenses, and you know, it was a fluke. It's like I felt that Rose went in there and she fought a smart fight and she figured her out and she knocked her out, and I don't think that she's really in a place to get a rematch. And I think that she's a great fighter, she might be able to fight her way back there for sure, but as far as next fight goes, I don't think that fight makes sense.
Your poor manager Brian Butler represents you, Zhang Weili, Rose. I don't know how he navigates this whole thing, to be honest. How do you feel about it?
It's crazy. The one nice thing about it, though, is I kind of always had the inside scoop of like what was going on, you know, because
sure,
when they have other managers, you're just like, what is going on? It's radio silence. But at least I kind of like would be like, okay, well, this is happening, we're waiting on this or whatever the case may be.
Regarding Rose, she has certainly come a long way since your fight against her in 2014, the inaugural strawweight title fight in the finals of The Ultimate Fighter. How much do you think she has truly improved since then? Do you feel like she is a much better fighter since then? And if so, where?
Oh, definitely. She's always been a great fighter. Like if even back in the Invicta days, you know, as like a young fighter, she's been a martial artist for a long time. And, you know, just seeing her always have these like crazy finishes, flying arm bars and, you know, all these things, she's always been like a very dynamic fighter. But I feel that it's hard to say if she's improved, like, you know, too much on the ground. She's always had great jujitsu, but, you know, so many of these fights have been with other stand-up fighters, and I've kind of expected her to go to the ground, but she's just stood, you know, stand and bang with everyone, and, you know, she's knocked people out. I mean, like, I saw her drop Michelle Watterson with a head kick. She knocked out Whaley. She knocked out Joanna. Like, I mean, it feels like she really came into her, like, into her timing and, you know, like, her process as far as the striking goes.
How about yourself? Where do you think you've improved the most since that fight, that first fight?
You know, I feel like I've improved everywhere, even my wrestling, you know, like, I've worked so much in so many areas, from, like, obviously the technical aspects, you know, like, jiu-jitsu, striking, wrestling, but even mentally, I feel like I've improved a great deal. You know, I've worked a lot on that. I've worked a lot on, you know, getting stronger, like my nutrition, supplements, everything. So I feel like just all across the board, I'm just a bigger, stronger, better fighter.
I always felt that you got a bit of a raw deal in that whole situation, because you came off a long season, The Ultimate Fighter, you win the belt, and then they asked you to turn around 3 months later and fight this buzzsaw who was coming up, who wasn't really all that well known at the time, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and we know how that turned out at UFC 185. Yeah. Has that always kind of not sat well with you, and have you always felt like you needed another crack at that title before your career was done to right that wrong?
Definitely. You know, I think I could sit and I could be, you know, bitter about that and whatever, but, you know, I feel like I just have to use it as motivation and, you know, just make the best of it. And, you know, hopefully, like, here I am, you know, put, you know, contending for another title. And, you know, you can't control the past, and, you know, I'm proud of what I've done. Like, you know, even though my reign was short, you know, I was, you know, very proud to be able to be the first champion in our division. And I mean, if you see, like, unfortunately, like, you know, some of the other champions for the women's division, the inaugural champions, have kind of not, you know, had their belts taken for other reasons. So, you know, at least I went out on my shield, you know what I mean? So, yeah, hopefully can come back and kind of right that wrong and get the title again.
You had that stretch in 2018 where you lost two in a row, and you had the fight against Tatiana Suarez, which was tough. Did you ever lose hope? Did you lose confidence? Did you find yourself thinking that that would be an unattainable goal to get back in that title fight during that stretch?
No. You know, this division is tough, and, you know, like, styles make fights, you know? So it's like, I beat Rose, I finish her, and then she goes and she finishes Joanna, and then, you know, Joanna goes and fights this person, you know, it's like, and gets finished by Whaley, but then Rose goes and finishes Whaley. Right. So it's like, you never know how people are going to mix up, how you're going to match up with people, how you're going to fall in the division. So although I was definitely very frustrated, and I felt that I had to go back to the drawing board and make a lot of adjustments and changes, I didn't lose hope.
Did you feel on Saturday like you got a weight lifted off your shoulders because you got your first finish since the Rose fight?
Oh my gosh, totally. Like, I've been, you know, it's been so frustrating, you know, because when you're fighting at this high level, it's so hard because everybody is so good. And, you know, it's just so hard to go in there, secure those finishes. So to, like, finally get one, especially at, like, this high level, and the timing was perfect, you know, because this is a obviously very important fight and I needed to make a statement. So when I needed it, it came through. So I was super stoked, but, I don't think it was just luck. You know, I was actually working on this my whole camp, you know, since my time off from my last fight.
Yeah, I know. And certainly I don't think any sane person would believe that. I think sometimes we take for granted, like, oh, are you going for the finish? Most fighters, I mean, I think there are some who have been branded as ones who just try to, like, ride out the decision victory. But I think most fighters want to finish to get in and get out as quickly as possible. And we take for granted just how hard it is to actually finish another human being, like get a stoppage of some kind. Against, and I'm sure there's times where you get frustrated where people say, oh, all you do is get decisions. From my vantage point, it looks like you're always trying to advance and inflict damage and things like that. Do you feel like you have been, you know, kind of misunderstood or unfairly, you know, characterized as someone who doesn't go for that?
I think a little bit, you know, it's like, you never want to have that label as, like, lay and pray, right. Like, I definitely feel like I really, you know, try to inflict damage. whenever I fight, but it's just hard because I think a lot of people know that they're potentially going to be in that position with me, and they don't want to open up. They want to neutralize. They want to hold on. They want to grab my arm. So it's like, you often see me in my fights, trying to jerk my arms out of people's grasp. And it's just, they're just trying to not get hurt, which makes sense. And, you know, potentially get stand ups or whatever. And, you know, so it makes it hard because I definitely want to get those finishes, but, that's why we keep working. That's why I keep studying and improving and figuring out how to deal with these things.
Perfect world for you. When would you like this title fight to happen? If you had your say?
I think, in a perfect world, I think sometime within September to December would be great.
In the September to December range?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Cause you had a long break in between your last fight in July and this one. You were supposed to fight in December, but it was never revealed why you had to withdraw from that fight. Are you able to say why?
Oh, yeah. So I never for sure accepted that fight. I had taken two fights back to back. I was a little bit burnt out. And then, you know, it was a potential of, you know, title fight could be on the line. So just kind of waiting it out and just, you know, fighting Amanda Rivas, you know, she's a great fighter and all, but, you know, fighting someone ranked so far, quite a few spots below me really didn't do anything to advance my career, but did a lot to advance hers. And mm-hmm. I was just trying to make the smart move. You know, obviously I'm not afraid to fight her. You know, I've been fighting the best of the best for over 11 years. So, you know, it was just a matter of, you know, I'm not going to rush myself into a fight when you know, it has nothing to do with her, but it's just I'm not ready to fight yet. I just needed a little bit more time off because, you know, burnout in the sport is real. You know, these camps are very intense mentally and physically. So I just kind of wanted to wait. And I told her, I was well, I'm willing to go, you know, in January, I was you can either wait for me or, you know, fight someone else and we'll fight later. I was it's not that I don't want the fight. I was I just need a little bit more time.
Okay. And so, we talked about your manager also, Brian Butler also represents Rose. Do you have an inkling as to what Rose, we haven't really heard from her. She's not the, you know, call out or post something on social media type about fighting. Do you have an inkling as to what she prefers, whether it's a rematch against Zhang or a rematch against you? I would imagine she would want to right the wrong against you. But I'm not sure if you have an inkling.
Yeah, no, I know that I was told that she does definitely want the rematch. And I think she's I think she said she figured Weili out already. She finished her. She's done with that chapter and she wants to fight the best. She said, you know, she's this fight is going to be a challenge. You know, I know she's really motivated to fight me. And I think it's, you know, we both have nothing but respect for each other, but I think it's a fight that we both really want.
Final thing, and perhaps most important, I saw you had some cookies after the big win. Of course, you are known as the Cookie Monster. What kind of cookies did we have? How are the cookies these days, you know, outside the Apex, Las Vegas? I mean, can we get good quality stuff or is it kind of run-of-the-mill stuff?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many options. We went to my teammate Alex Perez got these crumble cookies and they're so big that it's like eating a cake.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, they're so good. I had a German chocolate cake cookie and chocolate chip and I Fruity Pebbles one.
Yes.
Yeah, it was so good.
what is, I feel like I've asked you this throughout, you know, your time, my time covering you, but number one on the pound for pound cookie list for you is what?
Double chocolate chip, softer ones. Those are my favorite. Girl Scout cookie favorite, Samoas.
Okay.
Those are the best.
All right. And now you're off to Africa for a vacation.
Yes, I am going to Botswana to do a safari. And then wow. I will be going to Victoria Falls to do whitewater rafting and bungee jumping and, you know, just a bunch of cool stuff.
You don't hear a lot of people doing this right now. I mean, hopefully things are getting better all over the world. But you don't hear a lot of adventures being planned. So kudos to you on doing that. And hopefully it wasn't too stressful putting it all together in the midst of preparing for a fight.
Oh my gosh. I got everything done. I did all my research and I was I'm not touching this again until after my fight, hopefully everything's like all in line. And yeah, I'm really excited to go. I know things might be like a little bit like, you know, more difficult, but I was like, dude, there's no time like the present. Like if it's open, I'm going to take the opportunity and just go have an amazing time. It's just like with the UFC when they opened up, I know it was like, it's, you know, kind of scary, but it's just like, whatever, just do it, you know?
Respect. I love it. Well, I hope you get what you deserve. I hope you you get that title shot. It would be a great story of a rematch of a fight that's almost 7 years in the making. And the first fight was, you know, was very memorable and historic. And I think, you know, for whatever it's worth, I think you have done more than enough. So you could take that message to the UFC brass and let them know that I said that. And I'm sure it will help you greatly, Carla. So congratulations on the big win, the winning streak, and enjoy your time in Africa.
Thank you. I will. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much to Carla Esparza. Also, of course, thank you very much to Charles Oliveira and Paul Felder. Great stuff from them. You could go to the ESPN MMA YouTube channel to get the video interviews and everything else that we're doing over there. So a bit of a break for me, like I said. No Ariel the Bad Guy tonight or tomorrow. We've been doing two these days. No DC and Helwani on Monday, and then no Helwani show next Wednesday, but back on, I believe, June 7th it is, to do the whole darn thing all over again leading up to the pay-per-view on June 12th. And this coincides nicely with a bit of a break in the MMA action. There are some events this weekend, CFFC doing their thing and some local shows, but no UFC, no Bellator, no PFL. So a good time to hit the pause, a rare time, if you will, to hit the pause. There's usually like 43 or so UFC events. Well, they're taking a break this week. So I said, you know what? I'm going to take a break too. In any event, here we are wrapping things up. I appreciate everyone who tuned in. I appreciate everyone who stopped by today's show and who continues to stop by and support the program. Of course, check out everything on ESPN Plus, and please continue to rate, review, download, and subscribe to everything that we're doing here on the feed. I appreciate it more than you know. I thank you very much, and I hope that you won't miss me too much. All right? Back in 2 weeks, same time and place. Until then, I say peace. I'm out of here.